Welcome to Reasoned, the podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina Meditz. Professional development happens through hits and misses, trials and error, and lots of hard work. Join me as we discuss ways for you to grow skills, drive performance, and even build a professional brand. Today, it's my pleasure to have a conversation with Glenn Daniels, a Pulitzer Prize-nominated author, TEDx speaker, a publisher, and a world-renowned coach and mentor. He's got a long history of helping leaders create a multi-generational legacy of excellence. He has a deep experience in publishing and presenting the skills and techniques that truly make a difference. I learned of Glenn's work via one of his TEDx talks on goals, and I've been genuinely impressed by the messages that he is sharing. It's my absolute honor to introduce you to Glenn Daniels. Welcome, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Sabrina. Thank you very much. Those very kind words from you for me. Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, all of it. So, you know, one of my most favorite things to do when I'm talking with somebody who is a thought leader and a sharer is to really understand what are the things they're researching. Where's your headspace today?
My headspace really is in long ways from publishing and think materials on this, but we're really thinking about now how leaders connect with their minds, with their instinct, with their guts to make decisions. Because we oftentimes read when someone takes on their gut and accept that, it's usually right.
We spend a lot of time talking ourselves out of it. I think a lot of people do a lot of second guessing. What does that mean for me as it relates to, you know, potential social fears, or what does that mean for my employees? What does that mean for the company as opposed to just following their gut? What advice do you have for folks to try and follow their guts as it relates to leadership?
A book you should read, and as soon as the name comes back to me, but it's written by Mel Robbins. I think she calls it The 5 Seconds or something of that nature. But it's her top book. So if you just go Google Mel Robbins book, it's count to 5 or something like that. But what she's having you do is just counting down from 5 to 1 and then taking action. That does more than just the countdown of it. It allows your mind, because now your mind is focusing on the counting and not trying to debate the decision. Because, you know, once you get down to 0, you're going to go.
Yeah, so, absolutely. That's really interesting, because I think it helps to remove a bit of the pressure, right? And I think to your point, it focuses you on really sort of following your gut instinct.
Yeah, it drops you down into a spot where your mind is kind of working on the problem, for lack of a better word, the subconscious mind is working on the problem and giving that solution. And you told the subconscious mind, I need that solution within this count. Your subconscious mind is more than capable of doing that. I'm researching, trying to understand why it's capable of doing that. And so we can go ahead and make that to a solid formula. It's more useful, I think, at this point, to take that big breath in and concentrate on pulling air in and releasing it and then making the decision.
That's really interesting. I think there's a lot to be said as it relates to your physiological person and your psychological person and the connections between the two. What are you learning about taking that deep breath in? Like, what does that do to you in order to help you trust that instinct?
Well, taking the deep breath in helps you expand. Okay. And just the act of people using the body to expand shows confidence, creates confidence. So in workshops, I will always can tell people, and I say, I can tell those of you who have confidence and who don't. I can tell those of you who have the confidence, but you're trying to keep it in. I said, all you have to do is look to see the expansion. Then I just go through the room. So you can look at certain people and see, here's a person right here who has a lot of confidence because they have spread out. They've got all the papers, they're spread out. They're, you know, oftentimes in the next person's desk with their notebooks and stuff. And then you can see the person who's just like, okay, they'll really shut down in a really tight spot and they're carrying their body that way. So they're not breathing, they're not expanding. There's a TED talk that talks about how you use your body. And if you expand and to show confidence, you create confidence. So do it first in your body to create that confidence. That big breath in forces your lungs and upper body to expand. And so now you have in your body, your vibrational thought, if you will, the signal of confidence. And it'll help you find the answer you're looking for.
Yeah, I love that. I think one of the areas whenever I'm doing coaching with other leaders is I talk a lot about confidence, not ego. I think ego gets in the way quite often. But as it relates to confidence, confidence has a bit of vulnerability. It's okay to, I think to your point, be a little messy, right? Yeah. I think confidence allows you to do the right amount of delegation, the right amount of trust, to let someone make mistakes and learn from those kinds of things. And so I think starting from that base of deep confidence is really an empowering thing for leaders to remember.
See, and that is right on it. I would add just though, ego is not confidence.
No.
Okay. When people have, we want to play with the word and say, okay, you got to have an ego to get up in front of people. No, you just have to have a belief. When you have ego, it's your protection. People who demonstrate a lot of ego, they're trying to protect themselves from what they perceive is going to be an attack. Mm-hmm. So that ego says, I'm going to out-talk you. I'm going to out-show you that I'm smarter than you. I have more money. I have better cars. No, but if you have true confidence, you're not too worried about demonstrating that you have more than the other person. So ego, really, if people demonstrate an ego, my first thing is, well, maybe they don't really have deep inner peace and confidence.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you there. And I think whenever I point that right back to the workplace, I think those that end up using their title as a point of pride or a point of hierarchy tend to end up getting stuck in that space of pride and hierarchy as opposed to development.
The lowest level of a leader, the lowest you can be is your leader because of your title.
Mm.
That's the lowest level. And a lot of people, that's where they start out at. That's a lot of problem with my niche market and a lot of leadership organizations. They promote people because they've done their previous job well. They don't have to do that previous job. You get promoted because of your seniority or you've been knocking it out of the park. Your leadership skills, though, they don't have that. And the only reason people are following them is because they have the title.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the very top of that pyramid. Those leaders, people follow them because the people want to be in their orbit. They want to be part of their vision. That's the top rung. You know, hey, I want to follow that person because of the vision. The bottom rung is I have to follow that person because of the title.
Let's talk about that top rung, because I think that's a really exciting place to be. I don't think we can ignore the bottom one, right? Those are the pitfalls, the places you don't want to be. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on that sort of pinnacle place of leadership, right? Like that. To your point, like magnetic ability to take people toward a vision. How do you start stepping toward that?
Confidence. A lot of confidence, but it takes clarity. Mm. You have to have a great amount of confidence, but you have to be clear on things. And you have to realize that it's a collaborative world. You're going to have to work with people. People have to work with you. And you have a vision. You have a mission. It has to be clear. So you have to do that work on your own mind to get there. Simon Sinek has a great book out that paraphrases a lot of things. I mean, it's a great book, but it goes all the way back to Think and Grow Rich and Psycho Cybernetics, those type of books as well. When you're clear of what your definite chief aim is, your definite chief purpose is, you're just automatically going to be more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Automatically going to get more things done. You could have a passion. I can tell you a story about a gentleman who has a passion that had nothing to do with his job.
Mm.
But his passion was so strong. His passion was to travel. He wanted to travel.
Love that passion.
And I do too. In fact, I caught it genetically because I'm talking about my dad. Okay. Just a passion for traveling. Worked with the Postal Service. Nothing. Knew he didn't like the Postal Service. Knew he didn't like that job. But his passion for traveling said, hey, if I get promoted, I can have a little bit more money for my next trip. If I go to this next level, I can have a little bit more money. If I go to this next level, I can get more time. So I have to learn how to do my job better at the Postal Service so I can travel better. And he got to the point where he eventually moved up to be a postmaster here in Colorado. He was one of the first black postmasters in the United States.
That's fantastic.
So he was able to retire early, been retired now for over 30 years. Okay, so he was able to retire early and travel as much as he could until the health got him.
Yeah.
But that's why I'm saying, if you have a passion,
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily have to be a passion for the job, but you got to have a passion. Now, if you're like you and me, our passion is our job.
It is.
We don't work a day in our life. I mean, when I finally was able to do this without the fear of ever having to go back to corporate America and do it part-time. Since that day, I've never worked a day since.
Okay. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think you even talked about this as we came in, right? When you, it's not ego that puts you in front of people. It's a passion that puts you there. Yes. And so 100% feel you on that one, right? And I think, when someone, anytime I hear somebody who is passionately speaking about something, and thank you for sharing this story about your father, because I felt the passion in you just imparting that with me. I think that's a tremendous story, and thank you for sharing it. That I want to hear more. I want to lean in and listen to more. And so I think you're really on to something when you talk about passion and vision and confidence in terms of leadership. So I think that's tremendous. You know, in my experience, and I've been leading people for over 20 years, I've also found that this deep need to consider the person more than the work has always benefited me in creating a trusting and open relationship, and then lets these people trust me enough to let me develop them, for them to understand that I'm setting them up in a safe space to sometimes fail, to stretch them in certain ways. And so I'm curious your thoughts on the role of a leader in really, really creating greatness in the people that have now chosen to follow them, not just because of their title. How does somebody do that?
I think there's 7 roles that you have as a leader. And the number one role I think most leaders are aware of, at least a little bit, but most leaders are not putting enough into it. Your number one role is to be a developer of people. If you're a leader, that's your number one role, which means what you said, a safe place to fail. The gentleman who worked for IBM made $110,000 mistake. He was so afraid he was going to get fired that Monday morning when he went to go see his office in the office. The boss told him, said, "Why would I fire you? You just got a $110,000 lesson." And we all learned that lesson. So I'm not going to throw that money away. No, that'd be thrown away 10 times because you're going to go teach everybody else that same lesson you just learned. So teach me what the lesson you learned was. And so give your people a chance to be safe.
That's a tremendous message. And it's 100% right. He's never going to forget that $110,000 lesson.
Yeah. And he's going to share it all throughout. But now most companies would have dumped him on Sunday, called him and said, "Don't bother coming in." Most leaders, because of the mentality of the short term. So you have to develop your people. You have to give them that safe spot to get there. You have to know, first off, you trust them to get there, which means you got to give them the authority and the responsibility to get there. Yes, you have to manage that and measure that. But they know full well, if they have a problem, they can come to you or to another peer because you're going to allow them to get the job done. Delegation, I mean, that's a huge issue for people. But if you're developing your team, you know, you're going to have to delegate to your team. Mm-hmm. And to delegate for leader takes more time than for you just to do the job. The thought of developing people, if that's your number one job, that means you have to give them space to fail. And I might have said this, but you have to allow people to make that mistake. Like you said, it has to be safe. So they know that you're giving them the authority and the responsibility to do the job. You're going to measure that, okay, because that's your job, to measure the results, measure what counts. You'll measure that. But if you're going to give people the authority and the responsibility, that means you have to train them. So if you're going to develop people, that means you have to delegate. And most of leaders understand delegation takes more time for me to delegate this task to somebody than for me to do it. But in the end run, if you delegate properly and teach properly, in the end run, you're going to pick up an hour or two a week that you can put back into developing your team. football coach decided that he was going to develop all his coaches. Because he said, well, I'm kind of the CEO. I may be the head football coach, but I'm the CEO. The coaches report to me directly, not the players. If something mighty messes up on the squad, the coaches report to me. The players report to the their coaches, but the coaches come to me. So he said, what I'm going to do is start developing my people. Now, this felt counterintuitive to a lot of people because what he was doing is every offseason, this time of year, he would have interview, mock interviews for each coach on his team to say, okay, you're going to interview for the next position. Well, if you're a coordinator, you're interviewing for a next head coach position. And as the season ended, he said, there's eight different teams out there. You're going to interview with me for two teams. We're going to make sure that you have the skills and the techniques to interview properly and make sure you understand. So he would work with them to make sure that they understood, well, this team is different than this team. They had these players, that players. He would develop them. Now, the people got a little bit scared about that because what was happening, they said, well, these people are getting them better and they're leaving. Mm-hmm. Why am I training these people for them to leave? He said, well, why would I train somebody, not train somebody and keep them?
Yeah, 100%. I have this mantra that I use with my employees all the time, that you need to be updating your resume and doing mock interviews and doing things quite regularly. In fact, if you're waiting for the next opportunity to prepare your materials, you're too late. The job market is strong and hard. And by the time you've gotten a few days later, after you've seen this job you wanted to apply to, you then get your materials together and then put it in a couple of days later, it's sometimes too late. There could be hundreds of interview candidates in front of you that have their stuff ready to go. So I'm with you there on that football coach's thought. Develop people regularly, because I love this tying in of the message of, you know, my number one job as a leader is to develop other people, and the success of development is moving on, is moving into the next, is moving into the new challenge, and should really be seen as a marker of defined success, not the number of projects your team completed, but rather the number of leaders you've helped to cultivate.
Because a true next person, your next step, if you want to be selfish about it, you won't get that permission, that promotion, until you have somebody ready to replace you. So if you want to be selfish about it and look at it that way, I can get that next promotion when I have people, a pool of people ready to replace me.
I love that you said that. I challenge my employees all the time and say, look, I'm going to challenge you on this thing that's really hard, because I don't want to stay where I'm at, and you've got to develop in this space, right? So my commitment to you is I'm always going to be reaching for the next thing to create an opportunity for you. So you need to reach too.
All falls under, see, that's brilliant on your side, because that all falls under developing your people.
Yeah.
And to tie back to something else, if you're developing your people, you're developing them into your vision. And so they connect.
Awesome. So you talked a little bit, and we're talking about the number one thing, right? Develop people. But you mentioned that there are seven. Can you give us some insights into some other areas that folks should focus on as leaders?
Yes, I don't have my notes, but for sure, you have to absolutely understand you must break down walls. You must break down walls between departments, between people. You must break down walls so that people can work better. There should be no secrets. I love the way most companies set their IT team off in their own little part of the room or the building. They got their own team there. It was a company that I got to work with, and I suggested, let's take these IT people and put them in different areas. So they put an IT person down in the marketing. They were afraid to do it, but they put a IT person in the call center. Now, the problem was the first week or so, this IT person was inundated with the marketing team. Questions. Okay. But after that, once they got used to that guy being there and knowing that he can answer the way he needs to go about business, then they were able to get more work done. They're more productive. That marketing department, the call center, the sales team, each department they were sitting in, they became more proficient because the IT person understood what the marketing people needed. So he was able to deliver that ahead of time. Less downtime, more of ability to connect, more of ability to explain to each person in the marketing or the sales or the call center, yeah, we can't do that because we have this issue going on here. Now, there's security issues in place. There's a lot of small things that are in place there. So we can't do that for that reason. So break down those walls.
Yeah, I love that message, breaking down walls, because I also have a very deep belief in rapid, transparent communication, right? Rapid, transparent feedback.
What a wonderful way to put that.
Yeah. So like this whole idea of, and including a bit of vulnerability in there too. I think it's important to say things like, I am not good at the following. I need help with this piece of work or this project for the following reason, right? I'm an alphanumeric dyslexic, which means that I rely on various different tools to help me, but I am very candid with my employees in terms of, I'm not your proofreader, right? So let's talk about who and what tools you need in order to make sure that proofreading happens for you. I am going to be your biggest advocate, but I can't be your editor, right? So like, I think giving that and also making sure that they understand information from other areas of the business and they, to your point, sometimes are seated in the right place in order to make the right decisions. So here, as it relates to breaking down walls, I think that's a tremendous message.
And you just stepped on another one that's very powerful. Give people industry-wide knowledge. I want you to know as much about the industry as possible. Not that it has anything to do with your job, but if you know as much about the industry as possible, you will have a better understanding of that other person's responsibility. Why this is happening, that's happening, why you can't do this, why you can't do that. Just that ideal, I know as much as I can about my industry, about my company. So therefore, that wall's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're not withholding any secrets. Yes, sometimes you have to withhold money issues, you know, financial issues. Sometimes you have to withhold those things. But you have to let people know, this is why I have to withhold this. The SEC said if this information gets out before close of business day at the end of the quarter, they're going to fine us. So I can't really share that with you right now. Give people the knowledge they need. That's part of breaking down these walls. Every bit of knowledge that they can have, they need to have. No one should be in the dark.
100% agree with you there. And I love also giving that why when they can't and providing opportunities to participate in things. For example, if your company has earnings calls or other things, book the time on the calendar, encourage your employees to attend, listen, ask questions to you later, right? If something was confusing. But, you know, I did an entire episode on harnessing creativity. And part of harnessing creativity is simply absorbing, being curious, gathering information, because your brain is a master at creating connection, but it needs input to be able to connect things together. If you're not feeding it, it has nothing to create with.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You have to feed it. And this is where you asked me about what we're into a little bit now. This is where some of that study comes in.
Yeah.
Starting to realize that your brain operates on a vibrational level that we consciously don't think about.
100%.
That's why so much of it can take place. Your body can do so much without you consciously having to think about it. But that vibrational level is also outside of your body. If you follow Emerson's law of compensation, in one point, it kind of points to the fact that you already know everything you need to know. You just have to be vibrationally aware of it. If you're going to be creative, become vibrationally aware of everything around you, the information you're reading. Is it a good vibration for you to read? Are you watching TV? Well, that's, as a rule, not a good vibration, okay? Are you allowing nature to vibrate inside of you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you breathing the way you should?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Breath is so incredibly important. And I know we kicked this off as it related to just your confidence if you're breathing. But, you know, as someone who dances around the anxiety umbrella often, right? Yes. Breathing is so incredibly grounding. And I really love this thought of vibration too. I mean, I think a great example of that is if you closed your eyes and even plugged your ears and someone stood next to you, you will feel the vibration of warmth. You will feel that person's presence next to you. You know that they are there, right? So sure. Even without utilizing a sense. So I think that's a great example for those that are maybe even questioning what you might even mean by vibration, but it's all about the influence that you have, that you're putting into your body. And I think that then helps you radiate what you're then giving back out to the planet, to your employees, to your company, et cetera.
Absolutely. That's just right on. I mean, I always, people say, well, I don't know what to mean by vibration. I said, do you have a family member, brother, sister? Have you ever just kind of felt like they were in trouble?
Mm.
Most people say, you know, yeah, you know, there was that time. So that's vibration.
Yeah.
If you're your connectedness. Have you ever just felt like, my cousin loves to tell this story on my mother and her mother and all the aunts and stuff. They said, no matter what it was, someone could be talking about the other, and all of a sudden, they all will call each other. All of a sudden, they'll call each other. And I said, well, I'm not sure how much I can believe that, because there was 9 of them, but they can just feel it, and they just start calling each other. And throughout the course of the day, all 9 of them will be in contact with each, you know, all of them. So, something going on. That's vibration. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, okay, vibrational thought. Okay. You know what the right decision is for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, you know, here's one exercise you can do to help create that vibration so you can feel it and understand it. Let's say you're trying to decide what you want to have for dinner. You say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get some fried chicken or some chicken or and green beans or something. But you're not really sure yet. This trick is kind of feels a little bit hokey, but I promise you, if you try it, it'll work. Get your coin out. And I always say, heads is yes, tails is no.
Mm.
I flip that coin. And if it comes up heads, for example, yes, but my body doesn't like that answer, then I know.
Yes.
Okay. I just know. Okay. I hesitated. So no, pick something else.
Yep.
Okay. So whatever side the coin comes up on, if your body agrees with it, the vibration agrees with it, then go ahead and go for it. But if you feel that little bit of angst right there, that's your vibrational message. Make another choice.
Make another choice. I love that. Love that. So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, your job title being sort of this lowest level of hierarchy, lowest level of influence. You know, I think, you know, definitely pointing back to the fact that many of these people, I think, are lacking that confidence, therefore lacking their ability to sort of read and be in tune with vibrations, et cetera. So I'm curious, right? Like a couple of different areas. What can someone do to sort of help them become a bit more in tune with what they're bringing in, et cetera? And what mistakes do a lot of leaders make in just sort of avoiding this as a too much of a touchy-feely space? So I'm curious, what should people avoid? What could they learn?
I think when people are dealing with confidence issues and thinking it's too much touchy-feeling, I think that we forget the fastest way to confidence. I'm sorry, the fastest way to confidence is competence.
Mm.
Okay, you have to take the classes, the learning, the instructions. That's the fastest way to get to it if you're doubting yourself. Okay, you have to get the experience. You have to get the mistakes. Okay, you have to have those mistakes. That's the fastest way to get there when we're using our conscious mind.
Mm.
Okay. Competence will give you confidence. Okay. You have to understand, okay, this is how I have to have this conversation about letting this employee be liberated from the job. Okay. This is how that conversation has to flow. So HR is okay with it and they're okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I have to put together a checklist to make sure I don't miss anything. These are the skills and techniques you need. You look at the communication piece. In order for you to be a great communicator, you have to understand all the processes it takes to be a great communicator. Plus, you have to be flexible enough to make those processes work for each person who communicates differently.
Mm-hmm.
You get a hold of that information, and you start using that information, your confidence has no choice but to go up. It has no choice because you're going to become confident in it.
100%. I feel you there, because like when I first started standing up in front of people to speak, I knew that I could speak to anyone in a room if I was talking about a topic that I was fully competent on. Most of the time people signed up to come and listen, I knew not to challenge, but rather to absorb. And that gave me this extra boost of confidence to push through the nerves and have the conversation. So I think that's a really powerful message that you're sharing as it relates to competence. I also think it fits back into the conversation we were having of creativity as well. You're feeding that mind to be able to push more information out, to be able to create more. So I think that's a tremendous message, and one that I think people don't make enough time for.
Yes, they don't make enough time for it. And they also want instant results. You know, they want it. I want to be perfect my first day on the job as a leader. I don't want to make any mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're not making mistakes, you're playing it too safe.
Mm-hmm.
But always take the analogy of, okay, when you're doing something, let's say you're a painter. What's the difference between your first painting and the 100th painting?
Mm-hmm.
You've made mistakes all the way through there, but you've gotten better by the time you get to the 100. You've gotten a lot better. Okay. By the time you have a discussion, a coaching discussion or a counseling discussion with 100 people, you're a lot better than what you were the first time. So understand, get to that 100.
I happen to be a sculptor, so I know exactly what you're talking about. The first time you mess with clay, you're like, oh, it looks nothing like what was in my brain. Being critical of your work is actually a very, very healthy thing, right? Like perfection isn't something that is actually attainable. And so being able to see problems or evaluate and be critical of one's work, I think is tremendously helpful. And to your point, you're not going to be perfect as a leader. In fact, my last episode, we talked a bit about asking for help. And one of the points that I sort of put out there, how would you be able to connect with a leader who only shared things that they thought would impress you, right? Like how long would it take you to start pulling them apart, trying to find the flaws, trying to figure out what their imperfections are, because we as humans know we're not perfect, right? And so I think being able to share that bit of vulnerability, share the fact that you're not perfect, own up to your mistakes, right? Modeling the behavior for the employee of, this is my fault and I'm sorry, right? Let me talk about how I fix it or how we improve it. I think are really powerful messages.
It is a very powerful message. And that's so critical to be able to own your mistakes, figure out how to get to your mistakes, how to get them better, how to handle those type of things. These are issues that, well, this bothers me and it's a big thing. I oftentimes hear this in classrooms. People say, well, what about develop your strengths? There's a book written about that. And I said, okay, I hate to do this to you guys, but let me just ask you, if you're a basketball player, professional basketball player, should you only develop your right hand? Because that's where your strength is. You're going to develop how to dribble with both.
Yeah.
You watch the best do their warm-up exercises. What they're doing with both hands equally is just amazing.
It is.
Okay. If you're a leader and you're having a hard time on one-on-one conversations, but you're great in front of the team, should you focus strictly on just giving the team talk?
No.
You have to be aware of self-assessment.
Yes.
This emotional intelligence thing. Okay, that's out there now, and that's it's kind of fading. Things go that way. Mm-hmm. They get hot, they go down. But emotional intelligence, the first leader that I really read about who's applying that, of course he didn't call it that, was Abraham Lincoln.
Ooh.
Okay. During his time, he had so many issues he had to deal with.
Mm.
But it took a lot of, if you'll forgive the quote unquote thing,
yeah.
The quote took a lot of gumption to say, okay, you were the person trying to beat me out to become the president of the United States, but I'm going to give you the third most important job in the world. That's Secretary of State.
Absolutely.
Okay. That takes self-assessment, self-awareness for Abraham Lincoln to understand that Seward had this that he didn't have.
Yep.
Most of us right now would not even think about hiring that person. bring that person on board.
Absolutely. It takes a bit of humility to be able to do that, right? To understand where your weakness is and then match it with somebody who's very competent.
And that was the power of the emotional intelligence for a while, even though people kind of left that other part out. Okay, I understand where I'm at. Here's my weakness. I got to go fill that part.
Yeah.
We like people who are like us. So therefore we hire that way.
Yeah, I'm a big believer. In fact, you know, I agree with you. I think sometimes it becomes buzzword and then the buzzword gets burnt out and then we move on to the next thing. But I think, you know, emotional intelligence, informal leadership, the ability to influence, understanding how to read a room, understand how to read an individual, understanding all of these things in many ways are some of those inputs you just need to give your brain. It may not come, it may not be helpful in the moment, but it could be helpful in the long run if you're taking it in and observing, being present in the moment to really sort of absorb it and take it in.
You know, that's so key. It's so key. The last part you said just hit home for me. Leaders are present in the moment.
Mm.
Okay. You're going to be a great leader. You're present in the moment. What are you doing right now? The conversation is between you and me. The conversation is not between what I'm going to have for dinner.
Right.
Okay. Or the conversation is not going to go there. People can tell that if you're leading them, that your mind's not there with them.
Mm-hmm.
You want to build trust. You want that person to follow you, your vision, your mission, your dream. Give them your full on attention.
Absolutely. And trust me when I say this, and I know you're going to agree with me here, but it also means you're not thinking about what you're going to tell them next, right? Like being present is really being in the moment, not planning out. In fact, just thinking about what you're going to say next is tapping into those creative reserves.
It taps into it. And if I may give you just what I think is a quick, easy fix that helps with that, you got to develop the habit.
Hmm.
But I'm always saying to myself and teaching people in the communication process, always allow two beats from the time they stop talking to the time you start talking.
Mm.
The beats are based upon the speed of that other person's language.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give yourself two beats, that gives you the opportunity. If you need more, take it. But that usually gives you the opportunity to develop what you're going to say next.
Oh, that's a beautiful exercise.
So as if you're from the South, or I don't want to say that, but if you're from someplace,
I am.
Real slow.
Yeah.
But you know, the stereotype is you're talking real slow and you know, it takes you a while. If I'm listening to you and you finish your sentence and you're talking at this rate, I need to stop. One, two. Okay. Here's my thought.
Yeah.
Okay. This gives you a chance to develop what you're saying, what you're going to say, while they're not talking.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're 1,000% right. Giving people your full-on attention means you're listening to them, not figuring out what you're going to say next.
Yeah.
1,000% right.
I also really love this idea of a couple of beats of silence. You know, I've done a lot of coaching on coaching to performance metrics and coaching toward development. And I find that there's a real power in silence. Because their mind might just need the few extra moments to even put it together to then respond to you so that you can drive the conversation further. They can have that aha moment of just silence. Silence is so powerful. So I love that. Just getting into the habit of adding a couple of extra beats.
Yeah, it really makes a huge, huge difference about your ability to stop and figure out what you're going to say next.
That's awesome.
And once you do that, you're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah, I think that's super good. And I think we've covered a lot of really tremendous lessons. You've given some really great examples. I just want to thank you so much for your time today and speaking so candidly on leaders' roles, their ability to develop themselves, their ability to develop others. And honestly, just in general, their role in creating greatness. I think that's a tremendous value add, right? So I'm curious, where can our listeners find you online or where can they reach out and talk to you?
Well, I have a system set up. It's called schedulegleen.com. Mm. And what that allows you to do, if you think I've been of help, or if you think I can be of more help, go to schedulegleen.com. It gives you 15 minutes. Let's chat.
Yeah, schedule glenn.com. Reach out, schedule 15 minutes. In fact, Glenn, that's how you and I got to talk for the first time. I used schedule glenn.com, and we had a really great connection. So do reach out. That's schedule glenn.com, and have a conversation with Glenn. So I appreciate your time, Glenn.
Yes, great. I appreciate it. You got a wonderful, powerful sense of leadership. And I know you're sharing the message, and I hope you continue to share that message.
Thank you. That means the world coming from you. And I truly mean that. Thank you. Thank you for listening. I've been your host, Sabrina Meditz. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and recommend it to your network. You can always learn more at sabrinameditz.com/reasoned. We'll see you next time.